This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this.
As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
The JFK Records. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay, who's in for Jennifer Koshenka on this Friday, October 27. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
The National Archives has released nearly 3,000 pages of documents related to the 1963 assassination of President Kennedy, but other files have been withheld.
President Trump declares the opioid epidemic a public health emergency. Hear the startling number of people who are dying each day.
The door is open for Republicans in Washington to approve tax reform now that they've passed a budget plan.
And Massachusetts considers moving clocks an hour ahead permanently to Atlantic time to get more afternoon sunshine.
There could be potential benefits for retailers, you know, if more people are out shopping in the sunlight in the afternoon, or for school kids who might be encouraged to go outside and play. So they have found some potential benefits to preserving some afternoon sunshine.
Wall Street Journal reporter John Camp on the implications of a potential move to Atlantic time. He's here in about 20 minutes. Calling the nation's opioid epidemic the worst drug crisis in American history, President Trump is declaring it a public health emergency. But the president stopped short of calling it a broader state of emergency that would have given states access to funding from the Federal Disaster Relief Fund, as they would after, say, a tornado or hurricane. With the declaration, the federal government will waive some regulations and give states more flexibility in how they use federal funds.
The U.S. Postal Service and the Department of Homeland Security are strengthening the inspection of packages coming into our country to hold back the flood of cheap and deadly fentanyl.
The emergency status will last 90 days, but can be repeatedly renewed. The last time that a national public health emergency of this scope was called was in 2009 in response to the H1N1 influenza virus. Eric Hargan, the acting Secretary of Health and Human Services, says nearly $900 million has been invested in opioid-specific funding. The opioid crisis, by the way, is claiming an estimated 100 lives or more per day. The House has passed a budget that sets the stage for a rewrite of the tax system. The vote was 216 to 212. A slim margin that is an early indication of the difficulty GOP leaders could face in cobbling together the votes for a tax bill packed with compromises. House Speaker Paul Ryan.
We passed a budget that is fiscally responsible, it strengthens our national defense, and it's really good for taxpayers.
11 of the 20 Republican no votes came from representatives of the high tax states of New York and New Jersey, who opposed the budget because of the party's plan to limit or repeal the federal deduction for state and local taxes. Maryland Congressman Steny Hoyer.
We are not paying for what we buy. It's not spend, or tax. We do not pay for what we buy. It's easy to buy, and it's hard to pay.
House Republicans now turn to tax bill details on an ambitious schedule. Congress wants tax legislation before Thanksgiving, which means going from having no publicly available bill to consequential votes in 22 days. The passage of that budget clears the way for a sweeping overhaul of the tax code for individuals and businesses that could add as much as $1.5 trillion to the national debt. More from Herb Jackson, Washington correspondent for The Record in New Jersey. Herb, now what?
Well, it's now clear they have, as one congressman kept calling it, the runway to land tax reform on. That basically this paves the way, and it keeps Democrats from being able to filibuster a tax bill in the Senate as long as the cost of the tax bill is less than $1.5 trillion over the next 10 years. So anything that adds less than that to the debt, they can bring up in the Senate, and it only needs 50 votes in the vice president to be approved.
So now comes the details.
Yes, we've seen a framework for a couple of months that had, you know, some numbers in it, but it didn't have a important numbers that let me know how much my taxes would go up or down. And we're going to get those details. The House Ways and Means Chairman said that he'll have them out next Wednesday or Thursday, I think, November 1st, and then they'll have a hearing on it the following week. The House is kind of talking about passing its version before Thanksgiving, and, you know, there's some giddy Republicans talking about, you know, having this all done for the president to sign before Christmas. There's a lot that still has to happen before that, but they're certainly, you know, better off than they were if this vote had failed today.
Right. All right, so I know that they've put out this particular time frame or deadlines to hit, but these are not hard and fast, right? They're under no...
Correct. Yeah, they really have until the end of next September to get this done. The instructions that they adopted run through the end of the fiscal year, which is September 30th of 2018. But next year is an election year. All of the House and one-third of the Senate is up, and you probably have noticed that the first 9 months of this year didn't go quite as well as the Republicans thought it would.
Right.
And they're really itching to have something concrete to show the public, see, this is what you get for having a Republican Congress. And they've now said it's got to be taxes.
We're speaking with Herb Jackson, Washington correspondent at The Record in New Jersey, part of the USA Today Network, talking about the Republican budget that has passed in the House and how it opens the door for tax reform. The odds now are what? That some sort of tax reform will get passed?
I would think that's a fair guess. I mean, the big hurdles now, we haven't seen the details of the bill, and what will happen is, once we see the details of the bill, also to people who didn't know if their ox was getting gored, suddenly find out their ox is getting gored.
Right.
They're going to start rushing to the Hill. They're going to put ads up in members' districts. I talked to a couple of people from New Jersey, which is the state where my paper is. They're really nervous because the plan calls for eliminating the ability to deduct your state and local income taxes. But the fact of the matter is, you know, congressmen say the minute if this becomes law, the value of a home will drop at least 10% in New Jersey, and people will get upset about that. Mm. And it's going to affect other states like New York and California, and their members were lobbying to try and get a deal on this particular deduction. They didn't get it. They're now saying maybe we'll see it before the bill is actually unveiled next week. It could be some kind of cap, you know, people under $400,000 would get it. But we don't know the details, and once we see those details, the winners and losers will become a little more clear.
How will Republicans counter the inevitable argument this is a giveaway to the rich?
Well, you know, their Speaker Ryan last week said that he was going to add a fourth. They were going to add a fourth bracket. The original plan called for three brackets, with the top one at 35, and right now the top bracket is 39.6. There may be something like a 40% bracket for millionaires, so that they can see they're paying a higher share.
Thanks, Herb. Herb Jackson, Washington correspondent at The Record in New Jersey. The National Archives has released more than 2,800 previously classified or redacted records related to the 1963 assassination of President John F. Kennedy, but will withhold some of the records due to national security concerns. The newly released documents included memos about communist sympathizers, anti-Fidel Castro activities, and U.S. intelligence assets offering information on Cuba. Still others discussed investigative leads about assassin Lee Harvey Oswald's travels, including a trip to Mexico before the assassination. Historian and author Gerald Posner.
I would like to think that these documents would be a final answer where Americans could look at this case and say, okay, this is what happened. But realistically, that's never going to happen.
One memo from FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover offers Soviet reaction to Kennedy's death. The source says the news was met with, quote, great shock. The memo says the Soviets were shocked by the development and preferred Mr. Kennedy as the head of the U.S. government. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, Rasa Kay is here with more of America's First News.
Well, Gordon, calling the current opioid epidemic the worst drug crisis to strike the U.S. in its history, President Trump has declared a public health emergency. During a White House ceremony, he called for a new push to battle the problem.
We owe it to our children and to our country to do everything in our power to address this national shame and this human tragedy.
The order will ease some regulations to allow states more latitude in how they use federal funds to tackle the problem, but the White House plans to fund it through the Public Health Emergency Fund, which reportedly only contains $57,000. The Republican-led House of Representatives narrowly passed a budget plan that paves the way for a 10-year, $1.5 trillion tax cut measure. Speaker of the House Paul Ryan listed the positives for the middle class.
More jobs, fairer taxes, bigger paychecks for Americans.
But Reuters reports the tax windfall to big business will do little to create jobs, with U.S. corporations saying in recent post-earnings calls with investors and securities analysts that they'll use it to buy back shares, retire debt, and other shareholder-friendly moves. Forecasters are monitoring the development of a late-weekend nor'easter that will suck up tremendous moisture from the Caribbean as it charges up the middle Atlantic. The storm's lowest pressure is forecast to fall more than 24 millibars in 24 hours. That is explosive intensifying, meeting the criteria of what is called a meteorological bomb. New England stands to get the worst of the torrential rain and tropical force winds. A district attorney on Long Island, New York, announced his retirement after 16 years in office under mounting bipartisan pressure to step down. Democrat Thomas Spoda is indicted on charges he helped cover up the beating of a handcuffed prisoner by a police chief. Spoda and the head of his anti-corruption bureau also accused of obstructing an FBI investigation that led to the conviction of that former Suffolk County top cop. The World Series moves to Houston for Game 3 tonight, with the Dodgers and Astros tied at a game apiece. In New York, the Yankees have decided to part company with manager Joe Girardi after 10 seasons, including this last one, where he brought them within a game of going to the Fall Classic.
All right. Difficult one to explain in New York for many Yankees fans. Thank you, Rasa. 23 minutes now after the hour. Thanks for being with us. What if it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon in New York, but in Boston it's 5 o'clock? As Americans get ready to turn the clocks back next month, a commission in Massachusetts is exploring springing ahead 1 hour for good. Could the region manage such a switch? Sure would make those Monday night football games unusually late, right? More from Wall Street Journal reporter John Camp. John, what's up here?
So a commission created by the state's legislature has been studying the merits of shifting the state ahead 1 hour into Atlantic time, which you might not have heard of, but that's actually the time that they use in some Canadian provinces and Puerto Rico. And the idea is that, you know, when you look at a map, New England actually sticks out pretty far to the east. And what that means is that when daylight saving time ends every fall, it gets dark really early in parts of New England. And so the idea is, well, why not just essentially stay on daylight savings time all year round, you know, rather than falling back? And you could accomplish that by permanently shifting ahead into Atlantic time. So that's what they've been looking at.
All right. There are some semantics here, right? Because I would say, why not just, you know, opt out of daylight saving time?
Well, essentially, they would be opting out of it while also permanently jumping into Atlantic time.
Okay.
The trick is, you're not allowed to permanently opt into daylight saving time all year round. So you could essentially get there by just shifting time zones. But you're right, it's semantics. The net result would be your clocks move ahead 1 hour and stay there.
So ideally, Massachusetts would achieve more afternoon daylight. Is that what the state would be after?
That's the idea. You would trade some darkness in the morning for more sunlight in the afternoon. There are some surprising potential benefits to, number one, just doing away with the clock changes. For example, the commission cited in a draft report they produced recently that there have been some health risks and health issues associated with losing an hour each spring, including traffic deaths and workplace injuries. You know, you essentially get jet lag every year when you have to lose an hour. And then there could be potential benefits for retailers, you know, if more people are out shopping in the sunlight in the afternoon, or for school kids who might be encouraged to go outside and play. So they have found some potential benefits to preserving some afternoon sunshine.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter John Camp. His piece is called Massachusetts Mulls Switching to Atlantic Time and Staying There. Ultimately, approval here would happen how, if it happens?
So what's happening is that this commission is studying the merits of the idea. They're going to submit comments to a final report that will be produced shortly, and then on November 1st, so in a week, they're going to hold a vote on that final report. And then if they do give that report a favorable vote, that report then goes to the legislature and becomes fodder for the legislature to potentially write some bills. So as you can see, we're several steps removed from the state actually making this change.
Thanks, John. Wall Street Journal reporter John Camp. Maine, by the way, is also considering Atlantic time, but feels Massachusetts and New Hampshire need to join them to be effective. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Prices are for base buildings only. Do not include windows, doors, or accessories. Warning! Don't let your business get left behind in what is likely to be the biggest economic boom in recent history. If you need to build to grow your business, call General Steel today. Steel prices are expected to rise, but you can still lock in your price on a General Steel building if you call now. For example, a 40 by 60 foot building is still less than $25,000. Even an 80 by 150 foot building is under $99,000.
Imagine 12,000 square feet for under $99,000.
This building is designed for your needs, no wasted space. And you get the General's quality and 50-year structural warranty at a price you can afford. You can still save as much as half the cost and time of conventional construction by calling General Steel today. As much as half. So don't let rising steel prices put your project out of reach and stop you from making your company great. Call now. 877-61-STEEL.
It's not too late. Call.
877-61-STEEL. That's 877-617-8335.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us on this Friday, October 27. Gordon Deal with Rasa Kay, who's filling in for Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines: 2,800 records of JFK documents released. Opioid crisis declared public health emergency. House passes a budget that paves the way for tax reform. Pre-orders for the $1,000 iPhone 10 begin this morning. Thursday night football. Oops, Dolphins forgot to show up. The buzz, though, is about Kiko Alonso's hit on Joe Flacco. World Series Game 3 tonight. Oh, and please don't say, Houston, we have a problem. Houstonians are sick of that. But there is one group that really likes it. We'll explain in about 20 minutes. The revelation that Hillary Clinton's campaign and the Democratic National Committee funded an explosive dossier about President Trump has emboldened Republicans who view it as a turning point in the investigation into Russia's campaign meddling.
Well, I think it's very sad what they've done with this fake dossier. It was made up, and I understand they paid a tremendous amount of money.
It's a story by Jonathan Easley, national political reporter at The Hill. Jonathan, explain your piece.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just we finally find out who was behind this salacious opposition research dossier that has sort of become a centerpiece of the Russia investigation and had the attention of the FBI. It's even possible the FBI might have used it as part of its investigation into whether Trump campaign officials had improper contacts with Russia. But it turns out Hillary Clinton's campaign and the Democratic National Committee paid a law firm and a lawyer at that law firm who then subcontracted that work out to an opposition research firm that paid the British spy that compiled the dossier. So essentially you've got the Clinton campaign and the DNC funding this dossier that's been at the center of the Russia investigation, and it's just completely flipped over the whole storyline. I mean, it makes it look political. There's Comey has said that none of the details in the dossier have been verified, but this is something that's been spread around there and been damaging. And then it also gives the Trump White House more ammunition to beat back on sort of the central focus of the Russia investigation, which, I mean, Donald Trump Jr. was under fire for meeting with a Russian lawyer looking for opposition research against Hillary Clinton, and Republicans are saying, well, we have evidence that the Clinton campaign actually paid a foreign spy to pull together opposition research. So really it's just sort of roiled the entire landscape and given a lot of ammunition to Republicans to say that the Russia investigation is overcooked. Trump called it a hoax yesterday, mm-hmm. and it's brought sort of the Clinton circle back into things.
I mean, speaking of Clinton, where's the reaction been? It's been really quiet.
Yeah, well, I mean, the DNC, the current leader, Tom Perez, and the past leader, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, both denied knowing that this this Democratic lawyer had paid the opposition research firm, even though the DNC has paid millions of dollars to that firm for all kinds of different work. And from Clinton world, we've seen them sort of acknowledge that this went on, but push back on its significance. They say that this kind of opposition research happens in every campaign. Obviously, the difference here is that you've got some very serious allegations and charges against the Trump campaign, and this is sort of a central part of it. And it turns out the Clinton folks were behind it. So, I mean, it's just sort of turned this whole thing into a political mess and really made it hyper-partisan, I think.
Yeah. We're speaking with Jonathan Easley, national political reporter at The Hill. His piece is called GOP Seizes on New Clinton Revelation. What does this mean, say, from a political campaign standpoint with 2018 a year away?
Well, I mean, there's so many variables in 2018 right now. Who knows what this will do? Obviously, you've got a Republican civil war going on between Steve Bannon and his candidates, and Mitch McConnell and his candidates. You've got the DNC struggling to fundraise, and some of these Democratic candidates in the special elections have not been able to win despite all of the energy on the left in opposition to Trump. And now you've got just sort of another kink in this Russia story. I mean, it's just, I think what it does at the end of the day is it just sort of muddies the water on this Russia thing and makes it political. If you're a Republican, you're likely to believe it's all a hoax. If you're a Democrat, you're likely to believe that it's just a once-in-a-lifetime affront to democracy and election was stolen. So I think what it does, really, just Clinton's involvement in these new revelations, it just sends people back into their voters, back into their camps, and just sort of hardens their feelings and antipathy toward the other party, and just sort of we continue this trend of just hyper-partisanship, I think.
Thanks, Jonathan. That's Jonathan Easley, national political reporter at The Hill. It's 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Time for an entertainment update. In Stranger Things 2, the sci-fi horror hit on Netflix set in the 1980s, certain props catch the eye, like cameos by stars of that decade. A bulky camcorder, an E.T. figurine, and a fat Madrid brand skateboard.
Well, anyone who's been paying any attention to TV in the last year or so has probably been swamped with things related to Stranger Things, this show that kind of crept up on people last year with very little kind of pre-promotion or hype. And the show that was set in 1983 when it began really just kind of took over a little corner of pop culture by taking viewers back to this time period, even if they hadn't lived through it. It sort of immersed people in this world and synthesized a lot of the influences from that time, everything from Steven Spielberg movies to, Star Wars action figures and everything related to that. And it did a really good job of kind of recreating this time period, but not being too heavy-handed about it.
I thought it was interesting, too. You said the producer said he was concerned about going too much 80s, right, where it would actually distract from the show. Like, what kinds of things do they have? Like, what's visible?
Yeah, well, they fan out in the Atlanta area where they shoot the show and go to these estate sales and thrift stores and just go digging for stuff from that time period, of which there's plenty, because a lot of the homes in that area and a lot of American suburbs are still filled with this stuff that, wasn't all that long ago. It wasn't like ancient history. So they pick up a lot of these great kind of knickknacks from the 1980s, but I think what he was saying there is that, if you stick a big, say a Ferrari poster or some kind of other emblem of the 80s that was so, almost kind of cliche, it's going to draw the eye and distract the viewer in a way that maybe you don't want it to. Oh, I mean, it's one thing to have some very obvious things that they put in there, like the Reagan-Bush 84 campaign signs. They put those on lawns in the show to help you understand what the time period is and what year you're in and things that are going on. So certain things are very, they use as kind of signposts, but for the rest of it, they want a lot of this stuff to just blend in, you know, just be part of the background and not just be a kind of a museum of the 1980s, which makes it seem a little bit too forced, I think.
Right. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal entertainment reporter John Jurgensen. He's got a piece about Stranger Things entering a second season on Netflix. So there are some noticeable 80s items. You mentioned like the Reagan-Bush campaign sign on lawns, also an arcade feel to it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a, they recreated an arcade for one of the opening scenes of the show. And no, it's you know, it plays a minor role in the plot, but I think they were just kind of excited to like rebuild their fantasy arcade from the 1980s, you know, these places that, you know, are kind of in a way coming back. I was joking with them because they built this arcade in a suburban strip mall that had kind of, you know, had been gone derelict. And, you know, these old school arcade games are actually pretty popular now in bars in a lot of cities. So I was joking with them that they could probably just leave that thing open and start a business with it. But yeah, you know, I think there's a lot of head turning stuff like that where, you know, for anyone who lived through that time or, you know, wonders what that time was like, it certainly takes you back there. And, you know, it is a delicate balancing act because, yeah, you don't want to distract, but you want to just kind of create this immersion effect, you know, where you feel like you're just there and this stuff is, you know, part of the fabric of the characters' lives.
Thanks, John. Wall Street Journal entertainment reporter John Jurgensen, 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and defense. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today. Thanks for being with us. Saudi Arabia just made a non-human woman a citizen, making it the first country to grant a robot the right to citizenship. TechCrunch says why it did so isn't immediately evident, but the irony of a nation infamous for denying basic rights to its female citizens, bestowing a robotic Audrey Hepburn lookalike with rights, is not lost on them. The robot, known as Sophia, appeared on stage without an abaya, a head covering and cloak normally required by women in the Saudi government or by the Saudi government. The revelation and PR stunt came out of the Future Investment Initiative Summit being held in Riyadh. Hanson Robotics, the company that developed the robot, hails it as the most beautiful and celebrated robot. TechCrunch reporter Taylor Hatmaker says that's a claim to fame that surely means female robots will be just as sexually objectified as humans. Ouch. She says the company goes on to lavish gendered compliments, admiring its, quote, porcelain skin, slender nose, and intriguing smile, with effusive praise that she says is unsettling at best, but mostly just gross. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Rasa Kay is back with more of America's First News.
Well, Gordon, President Trump calls America's painkiller addiction crisis a national shame and has declared it a public health emergency, announcing a plan to target the abuse of opioids, which kill more than 140 Americans each day.
We can be the generation that ends the opioid epidemic. We can do it.
The declaration won't free up much additional funding at the outset, but it does allow Acting Health and Human Services Secretary Eric Hargan to loosen certain regulations that he otherwise wouldn't be able to. House Republicans passed a budget legislation narrowly overcoming internal and Democratic opposition to pave the way for large-scale tax cuts. The legislation authorizes special procedures that'll let Republicans reduce federal revenues over the coming decade by as much as $1.5 trillion without Democratic help. Not that House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi would.
When the Republicans voted to advance the budget that they put forth, they drew a line in the sand between the middle class and working families and the very wealthy and corporate America.
20 Republicans joined all the Democrats in voting against the bill. The National Archives has released only 2,800 previously classified or redacted documents on the investigation into the assassination of President John F. Kennedy in 1963. The remaining records will remain under review for another 6 months. Newly released FBI papers on the 2012 Sandy Hook massacre indicate advance warnings that a troubled young man with access to guns planned to attack the elementary school. A man warned Newtown, Connecticut police 4 years before that Adam Lanza told him he had an assault weapon and was planning to kill children at the school and his mother. No action taken. A parade of prosecution witnesses at Fort Bragg spent this week describing the danger they faced and at times bitterly injuries and losses they endured searching for Bo Bergdahl after he disappeared in June 2009. Bergdahl awaits sentencing after pleading guilty to desertion and misbehavior before the enemy for walking away from his barracks in Afghanistan. And Gordon, this boy feels the need for speed. 10-year-old Ohio kid taken into custody after leading police and state troopers on a high-speed pursuit started in Cleveland, ended miles away when troopers boxed him in on the Ohio Turnpike. Speeds up to 100 miles per hour, swerving across lanes. No one hurt. It's the second time in 2 weeks the boy has taken cars on joyrides, and he was released in the custody of his mother.
He's 10.
He's 10.
NASCAR would like a word with him.
I'd like a word with him.
6 minutes now in front of the hour. Thanks for being with us. Should a problem arise in the World Series between the Astros and Dodgers, Houston knows it will be subjected to, "Houston, we have a problem," again and again. Wall Street Journal says the words are a slight variation of the understated reaction first radioed in by Apollo 13 astronaut Jack Swigert during a mission to the moon in 1970 that had to be aborted. The actual quote is, "Okay, Houston, we've had a problem here." One group, though, that does not mind the cliche, NASA. The journal says the space agency likes the publicity so much that it recently named the new Johnson Space Center podcast, "Houston, We Have a Podcast." For Rasa K, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.